From KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Gregor.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Jeff Beery. On today's episode of Air Check, Portland band Ages and Ages drops by for an interview and in-studio performance. Bob Slade, host of KRCC's Retro Fix, shares some of his favorite songs about work in honor of Labor Day. We discuss the ever-changing industry of music retail with Judy Negley and Sean Mayo of Independent Records. And Dick Fairley interviews local jazz guitarist Wayne Wilkinson. All that today on Air Check.
So normally we begin the show with our musical roundtable, but today we're going to switch things up a little bit, and instead of sharing our favorite new releases, we're going to delve into the always interesting topic of guilty pleasures. But that'll be at the end of the show, so stay tuned. And instead, we're going to begin today with a conversation that Jeff had with KRCC's own Bob Slade. Labor Day is this week, and so we thought we'd take the opportunity to listen to some songs about work. And we knew Bob would provide an interesting perspective.
Yeah, you know, he really does. Bob is an interesting guy. He's the host of Retro Fix. You can hear it Friday nights from 8 to 11 here on KRCC. And he's one of those guys that has an encyclopedic knowledge of music, kind of like GT. But his focus is on punk and new wave. And I asked him to pick a few songs about work, and here's what he came up with.
All right, here it is. Bob Slade and Jeff Beery with Workin' Songs on Air Check.
So, Bob, you're kind of a punk. You're kind of an old punk rocker, aren't you?
Well, I came from the new wave background in general. So that included punk and it included industrial gothic music, techno pop, and things like that. Industrial was very big at the same time in Miami as punk and new wave.
You came out of Florida. How long have you been doing radio?
Oh, for at least 25 years.
Quarter century.
Yeah, sure.
So we're going to talk about labor songs, working songs.
When you mentioned work songs, the first song that popped in my head was Devo's Working in a Coal Mine.
Well, I've been working in a coal mine.
And that was an unexpected crossover hit for Devo. And I think all these other bands were trying for hits with these working songs. They're more like negative, anti-complaining, resigned working songs as opposed to, oh boy, we love work, you know, we love the working place.
So my take on this is that these guys were tired of working and wanted some cash. They wanted a hit. They wanted to sell some records, so maybe they didn't have to work as hard at this thing.
Yeah, the advice is don't quit your day job until you've got money in the bank.
Let's start with The Clash. We'll listen to The Clash and the tune you chose.
Career Opportunities. It's basically complaining about the whole lifestyle of, you know, trying to get ahead in the working world. Career Opportunities is probably one of the most well-known songs off their first album.
This song came out in 77. So this was written in a time of economic angst.
There was a class war in England at that time, especially later on with Margaret Thatcher in the 80s, during the Reagan era.
Right.
You know, so there's some of that in the early 80s as well.
What do you like about this song?
Oh, it's just a catchy tune from The Clash, and when it originally came out, it sounded probably, you know, too harsh for some people. But now, in retrospect, right, after, you know, almost 40 years after the fact, It's just a catchy rock and roll song. Yeah. I got no choice. Career opportunity, the one I never knocked. Every job they offer used to keep you out the dark. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked.
All right, let's move on to Mr. Elvis Costello.
First song off his first album, 1977.
77.
Yep.
All
this
right.
is what he opened up his album with. And Welcome to the Working Week is something that could kill you, working a tough job.
Something that could kill you, working. Let's hear it. Elvis Costello, Welcome to the Working Week.
Now that your picture's in the paper being rhythmically admired, you can have it a one that you have ever desired. All you gotta tell me now is why, why.
So the Clash, really anti-work, we're moving into Elvis Costello kind of, you gotta do it, you gotta work. That's what I get from this song.
Yeah.
You show up, you gotta do it.
You know you're gonna do it.
You know you're gonna work. All right, Elvis Costello, who has since moved on to incredible critical acclaim, probably more than the Clash, would you think?
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
Because he's still doing it.
Spend all your money getting so convinced that you never even thought of love. Sometimes I wonder if we're living in the same land. Why'd you want to be my friend when I feel like the children running out of hands?
All right, next band, The Specials. We're staying with the British bands.
The Specials, who put this out in, I believe, 1980. Thereabouts, 1979, their first album, which was produced by Elvis Costello.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, he produced them back in the day when they were all on Stiff Records, and was kind of a little bit primitive production, but it still came through. The music is excellent.
Mm-hmm. And the song we're going to hear?
Rat Race, and that pretty much says it all. You know, if you're out there, you're part of it.
All right, The Specials, Rat Race, next up on the Labor Day edition of Air Check.
You're working at your leisure.
Fun little era, the English Beats.
There are a lot of people's favorite ska band.
Madness, yeah.
A lot of people think The Specials were the greatest of all the English ska bands.
They were good.
I was very heavily into ska music because it kind of connected to new wave and punk and rockabilly and surf music. You could mix it in. It was a fun way to mix up a set.
Let's move on to an American band. We've focused on three English bands, British bands. Now we're going to play an American band.
Yeah. One of the all-time classic American bands, Ramones. And this song, It's Not My Place in the 9-to-5 World, was a Joey Ramone composition from 1981, their album Pleasant Dreams. And you could tell that Joey's going for a hit on this one.
He was working for the pop hit.
Yeah, but it was not to be.
All right, let's have a listen. The Ramones, It's Not My Place in the 9-to-5 World.
Who the hell do you think you're fooling?
I like it. I can hear some pop sensibility in that.
It's a radio-ready song. I hear that he's talking about himself, that he's just not that kind of guy that gets up at 6 in the morning. He's a night owl, so he can't do the 9 to 5. If you're staying up till 2 o'clock in the morning, it's almost impossible to, you know. That's pretty much it.
Good picks, Bob.
Well, thank you. I have another 20. We could do this, we could make this a 3-hour show.
Just got to mention music and Bob's turned on.
Here's another one. Okay. This is a great one. This is Tim Curry. He is the Rocky Horror star, Frankenfurter. Tim Curry had a solo career in music, and there's this great song, Working on My Tan, which is a song about working hard at doing nothing.
That's a labor of love right there.
Working on my tan.
Thanks for coming in, Bob.
You're very welcome.
Friday nights, Retro Fix, 8 o'clock here on KRCC. Working on my tan.
That was Jeff Beery speaking with Bob Slade, host of KRCC's Retro Fix show. You're listening to Air Check from KRCC. Jake, our next segment comes from you, so why don't you set it up?
All right, well, for this segment, I had the chance to speak with a couple of people who have had front row seats to the transformation of the music industry over the last few decades. And that's Judy Negley, the longtime owner of Independent Records, which operates 3 record shops in Colorado Springs, and Sean Mayo, who manages the company's flagship store on Platt Avenue. They've weathered major format changes and the explosion of internet music downloading and streaming, and have seen the role of the record store change dramatically during their time. So I recently invited them into the studio to talk about some of those changes and to discuss the importance of the record store today. Don't try to come to my record store. No, I don't want to see you in my record store. Don't try to come to my record store. Don't try to come to my record store. Judy Negley, Sean Mayo, thank you guys so much for coming in to talk to me today.
Oh, thanks for the interest.
So I've invited you guys in to talk about independent records and record stores more generally. And I guess my first question is for you, Judy, which is when you first got involved at Independent Records in 1981, could you talk a little bit about what the record store meant to you, why you were attracted to it?
Yeah, you know, I had done... you know, some various things, and it's kind of happenstance with Independent. It was really my last choice of a place to work. There were many record stores in town in those days, Budget and Sound Warehouse. I knew I didn't want to work at Sound Warehouse, but Independent seemed like too bright and just a little different environment than what I was accustomed to. So it was kind of my last choice, and but they were the ones who called me, and I needed something to do right then, and if it was with music, it was great. The thing that really attracted me to retail music was just the connection. When you're dealing with the end consumer who's coming in to find their next favorite thing, there's a magic about that that can't be replicated, I don't think, or at least I haven't found it.
It seems like prior to the explosion of internet music blogs and discovery of music through, you know, the variety of means that we have today, the record store was kind of the clearinghouse, not just for music, but for information about music and for discovery of new music. Is that accurate?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in those days, that was really true because there were so many gatekeepers to music, you know, I mean, you guys aside, but radio, you know, who the labels wanted to push. I mean, there were only so many artists you got to vote on. Really, and then you didn't have access to the rest. You know, if the label didn't want to put money behind it or whatever, it was a lot more difficult to grow music organically. And now that's become wide open. I mean, you know, as much as you want to look, you can find anything. You know, anybody can put anything on the internet, which, you know, is both a good and a bad thing. But it definitely leveled the playing field. And I'm a huge fan. I mean, has it been good for business? Not exactly. But has it been good for creativity and music? And I look at the record stores, it's always been a microcosm of what's going on societally at large. I mean, we may have experienced that earlier than other businesses, but now you're seeing it everywhere, you know, all physical retail, you know, radio. People have lots of choices about where they can go and how they want to get their entertainment or their necessities, for that matter. You know, I consider music a necessity, but not everyone does. I know that.
For music lovers, you know, for the last many decades, the experience of going into the record store and flipping through the CD racks, the sort of tactile experience of unwrapping a new CD or a new record, for me, even, you know, I'm a millennial internet age music consumer, but I still have very vivid, emotionally charged memories of holding CDs and of unwrapping them and putting them in for the first time. Do you see that still among young people?
I think that's a huge deal right now for teens, young people, and people of all ages. But, you know, it's very participatory coming into the record store. It's a journey. It's a destination. And you get in there and you feel the vibe. There's music playing right away, flipping through the racks, finding something that you've been looking for forever or something new that just strikes you, maybe because of the cover. And, you know, taking out the vinyl and participating, putting it on, cueing it, you know, flipping the side, reading the lyrics, looking at that cover and the art of vinyl, which I'm speaking about right now. And I think that's a big deal to be able to have something, you know, to hold and keep. And then, you know, you get a little further into it and you're collecting now. And, you know, you start and you have just this, you know, little collection of CDs and it starts growing. And you're like, check out my collection now. You know, remember when I only had just a few? And then it consumes you.
Yeah, it's super cool. I mean, you know, when it comes right down to it, there's nothing like that feeling of thumbing through stuff. And like you say, it's just truly a very connecting experience.
It seems like now, maybe more so than in the past, going to a record store is a kind of lifestyle choice, more so than a necessity.
It really is. I mean, you know, it's not like when we used to have the masses come in. You know, we would do an in-store and we'd have, you know, 1,500 people out there. A new release, people would line up for a new release. It's way different now, and people have a lot of choices there. But the people who are still coming into record stores, and new people are finding it every day and discovering the appeal, but the true collectors are still going to record stores, still going to thrift stores, for that matter, still going anywhere they can to find stuff.
Do you guys worry about the future of record stores?
I do.
I worry about the future, period. I think that, you know, I don't like to speak in generations, but we did lose a whole generation of people that weren't into the physical product, kind of. And they were gone, and the record industry watched them go away, did nothing about it, and then, you know, the generation behind that, your generation, really came back in a lot of ways. And so the future, yeah, I mean, we're getting ready to reopen the Annex as a vinyl-only store again. I mean, we remodeled, we expanded it, we made it bigger. And that's a that's a nutty thing to do, really. What we probably should be doing is consolidating down to one store and, you know, hey, come here if you want or whatever. That would be easier. It would be certainly more financially prudent, but that's not what we're doing. So, you know, better to burn out than to fade away, in immortal words.
Very nice.
But and maybe that's what'll happen. But people will keep making music, and however they get that, whether we're a part of it or not, is irrelevant. We had our run. It was fabulous. We hope we have some more. But this has never been a big money-making venture. We've lived paycheck to paycheck our entire lives. That's okay. You think about it, it's the one business that mass merchandises an art form. You know, I mean, books, yes, you know, there's some other things, but music in particular. And that's a heavy-duty responsibility for us. It's a heavy-duty responsibility, period. And I think that it's an honor. So, you know, however we fit into that, if we fit into that, great. Does it mean music's going to go away? No, it just means it's going to be delivered differently. That's okay.
You have any thoughts on that question?
Well, as many times as it's changed, you know, you take it back, you know, since the beginning of rock and roll, it's changed, but it's survived. So as it continues to change, I believe it will still survive all the record stores. Well, you know, anybody who's got their heart into it, it doesn't matter the size. It could be a very small record store, but they will be there.
So my last question I have to ask you guys, Desert Island pick, what would it be?
Oh my gosh. I think it would have to be the first record I ever bought, which was Marty Robbins' Gunfighter Ballads.
To the town of our free, who rode a stranger one fine day.
I think that would be mine. You know, I'm a huge Elvis Costello fan. There's a lot of things I can't live without, but that would have to be it for me.
You'd have to take it back to the beginning.
I would. I love classic country. I love singer-songwriter stuff.
It was early in the morning when he rode into the town. He came riding from the south side, slowly looking all around.
This is going to change if I was asked this question tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
But for today, I vividly remember the first vinyl I bought from Sound Warehouse, and it was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And so today, that is the choice.
Well, thank you guys both so much for coming in and talking to me.
Thank you, Jake.
Hey, thanks for having us. Thanks for the interest.
That was Jake Brunell speaking with Judy Negley and Sean Mayo of Independent Records in Colorado Springs. You're listening to Aircheck from KRCC. Coming up, we've got an interview and in-studio performance from Portland band Ages and Ages. Stay tuned.
KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Aircheck, a show about great music from the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell, producer at KRCC.
I'm Vicki Greger, host of the Morning Music Mix.
And I'm Jeff Beery, host of the Blue Plate Specials.
Next up on the show, we've got an in-studio performance and interview with the band Ages and Ages.
When I walk, there will be no.
So, Vicki, you had these guys on during the Morning Music Mix while the band was in town for a show at Ivy Wild recently. What can you tell us about them?
Well, Ages and Ages was formed in 2009 by a group of musicians out of Portland, Oregon. They've released a string of great records, and they've found some fans in high places, including our very own President Barack Obama, who included a song of theirs on his playlist during the 2012 re-election campaign. So they came into the studio to play a couple stripped-down songs, and they talked to me about their music and their career as a band.
All right, well, here's that interview and in-studio performance with Ages and Ages.
Ages and Ages, thank you so much for making time to come in today. And I know you're busy traveling, setting up, doing all the stuff you do. But I'm going to ask you to do a couple songs. But I've got a few questions I wanted to ask you, if that was cool. Tim?
Yes.
In fact, everybody who's here, Tim, Sarah, Annie, Rob, and who else?
Colin.
All right.
And Evan.
And Evan. Thank you. They're all here today with us. So you guys, what I was interested in is you're from Portland, or Portland is where this all happened. So I'm thinking about Portland. I'm thinking about it being the hallmark of, you know, an indie scene. How was that coming up in such a, you know, a scene that, is, you know, kind of defines the nation when you think of, you know, excuse me, indie?
Well, yeah, Portland's a really eclectic scene, and there's something for everybody there. There's just such a rich artistic community that that provides any kind of sound or you know, artistic choice you have on any given night. You can go out and see different bands. What's fun is when these different bands sometimes have shows together, so you get to see like good bands, but that are very, very different, you know, different tastes and whatnot. But as far as what we do, you know, it's its own thing.
I think it helps that everybody in the band comes from a really different perspective with music. So the songs that Tim writes are different than the songs that Annie writes, are different than the songs that Rob produces on his own, and the music that Colin makes. I don't write music, but I dance, and the music that I dance to professionally is really different. So I think everybody coming from a slightly different or incredibly different discipline makes this kind of unique in its own right, because we appreciate it and treat it as its own thing, as opposed to, you know what I mean?
Something I do.
That is a part of something bigger.
Was there a light in your eyes when you sort of all came together in this configuration? And, you know, certainly we'll hear this in a few minutes for the folks who aren't as familiar with Ages and Ages. When you got together and sang, or just kind of shared sensibilities, is that a feeling you just know this is going to work, this is going to lock in?
Well, I think Tim writes such great songs that we didn't all come in at the same time. We all, you know, have come in and out at different times. And his songs are so well organized from the get-go. I mean, he really envisions it pretty, and Rob too, in a holistic way, so that when you come in, it's pretty clear what your part is, and then as individuals, we can sort of make it our own, because we have no choice, because we're individual people. But the songs are so well fleshed out that that it sort of works from the get-go.
Well, let's have an example of that. Ages and Ages here at KRCC. Some beautiful music from them. Here we go.
it's all right. And they want more than what you got left, and they want more than what you wanna give, but it's all right.
Ages and Ages here at KRCC. Well, I'm probably asking you some stuff that I know that's been well asked, but I do have to know. So President Obama, Barack Obama, uses No Nostalgia as part of the re-election campaign in those songs. I just have to know, how does that happen? And do you get a phone call, or do you just happen to hear it if you're watching a debate and go, hey, that's me?
Hey. That's me. I heard about it one morning when I woke up, and there was like a, what do they call them, a Google alert or something, mm-hmm. about something, the Washington Post, Ages and Ages, New York Times, Ages and Ages, and all this stuff. And Ages and Ages is something people say, so I just kind of thought like, oh, well, that's obviously, you know, something like that. So I didn't pay much mind at first, but then it became apparent to me that we were somehow on a playlist that Barack Obama made, which it was surprising to me as it was anybody, but more so actually, because it's our band and our song.
Do you get a call? I mean, do you get a note thanking you or anything like that?
No. In fact, I read something in one of those articles that, you know, they were diligent to make sure they got permission from everybody, and they never called us.
Oh my gosh. Is it okay? I mean, is that okay, really?
Well, it's okay. So there, you know, in your lifetime, you think about a lot of hypotheticals, but one of them isn't, what if the President of the United States used one of our songs to, you know, for a re-election campaign? Because if you ever came up with that hypothetical, you'd just obviously be a crazy person. Unless you were Bruce Springsteen or something. But
right.
So it definitely, it caused us to have to sort of think about, like, when it happened, like, oh, you know, like, what does this mean? And how do we feel about this? You know, I was a very proud Obama supporter, and, you know, my political leanings are what they are. But in terms of this music and art in general, like, do we want to endorse a particular candidate or a particular agenda? We had to mull that over a lot.
Yeah, because it is. It's your art and your vibe and your energy, and I definitely understand that. Ages and Ages here at KRCC. I know you've got another song, perhaps, that you'll play for us before we let you go on to bigger and better and other things. So Ages and Ages, a delight to have you here, and looking forward to whatever you sing next.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, a pleasure.
Yeah, we're gonna do an a cappella version of a song called All of My Enemies. One, two, three.
All of my enemies came at once. No patience left we had. Left unresolved.
Ages and Ages here at KRCC. There's a smile on my face just from the pure beauty of your sound. And I thank you for that. Your latest record, Something to Ruin, Ages and Ages, a delight. Thank you so much.
Thank you
for having us.
That was Vicki Gregor, music director here at KRCC, with an in-studio performance and interview with Ages and Ages out of Portland, Oregon. To hear that interview again, you can head to krcc.org. This is Air Check from KRCC.
While the others point back at us, fetishize some golden age you never really was, manufactured the town.
For our next segment on Air Check, we're going to turn things over to KRCC's jazz guru, Dick Fairley. Dick recently had the chance to speak with local jazz guitarist Wayne Wilkinson. Wilkinson's an accomplished musician who's played in the Air Force Falconers and Airmen of Note bands, and whose career has taken him from Carnegie Hall to the White House. In this conversation, he tells Dick Fairley how he got his start in jazz, and he shares some recollections about local jazz legend Johnny Smith.
Hi everyone, I'm Dick Fairley, host of the Thursday Evening Jazz Excursion here on KRCC. I'm here with Wayne Wilkinson, Colorado Springs resident and jazz guitarist extraordinaire. Welcome, Wayne. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Wayne, you've played all over the U.S. You've played the White House. You've played with President Clinton. And I have to ask, does Bill Clinton have the chops on the tenor sax?
You know, he did a great job, and I always joke with people and say, well, he makes a better saxophone player than I would a president.
So I'm always interested in how people end up doing the things they do. How did you get started in jazz?
Well, my father was a guitar player, and he wanted to get me going early on, and it just didn't take. Finally, when I was 15, I started taking lessons with him. And after about a year, I found somebody whose father taught guitar, and his name is Dal Daggett, great South Texas jazz guitar player. He really got me going on jazz. So that's when I heard that, I said, wow, there's nothing like that sound.
And when did you first realize you had the talent to play improvisational jazz?
That's a good question. I played baritone horn in junior high, and then I switched over to the tuba in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I, back then in the 70s, or in the 60s and 70s, you had all these TV shows that had theme songs, like Gilligan's Island,
right,
or Andy Griffith's Show, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I would be practicing the tuba, and then I'd just be playing by ear the theme song to the Andy Griffith's show or what have you. And I realized that I had the kind of a knack to play by ear.
Great.
And improvise.
So who were some of your early influences in jazz?
Well, I'm dating myself here because I remember I had an 8-track.
We remember those.
Remember 8-tracks? Yep. I had an 8-track of Joe Pass that I had bought in a mall in a record store in Virginia. And this fella said, you gotta listen to this guy, Joe Pass. So I stuck the tape in, and I couldn't believe what it was. One of those virtuoso recordings that Joe Pass did, just solo guitar. And I thought, wow.
So I'd like to have you talk a bit about Johnny Smith and your relationship with him.
Sure.
And your impression of Johnny.
Sure. Well, when I moved to Colorado Springs, somebody said, hey, you got to go check out Smith Music. Johnny Smith owns it, and he's a great, great jazz guitar player. And I really didn't know too much about Johnny Smith until I moved to Colorado Springs.
Uh-huh.
So I drove over to 8th Street in Cheyenne Village and went into a store and ask him if I could play with him.
Uh-huh.
He was sitting behind the counter with his apron on, working on some guitar. And I said, Mr. Smith, I'd like to have the chance to play with you if you don't mind.
Uh-huh.
So he took his apron off, grabbed a guitar, and we sat down and we played. And so that's when I first got to know him.
Uh-huh.
Johnny was always such a gentleman. He took me out to dinner a couple of times,
uh-huh.
And I got to know him that way. Went over to his house once.
For those who don't know, Johnny Smith was a prominent jazz musician in the 1950s.
And oh, yes.
He left New York City and moved to Colorado Springs to care for his daughter.
True.
After her mother, his wife, died. And he just walked away from jazz as a prominent performer and spent the rest of his life, bought a record shop here in Colorado Springs. And I once heard an interview with Johnny where he said, "I loved the New York music scene, but I hated living in New York City." So he said, "I have no regrets about coming to Colorado Springs."
Well, a quick story that Johnny Smith told me. He said he remembers playing in the famous club, the Birdland, till about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Uh huh.
Now this was back in the early days. He was huge. So after he finished playing at Birdland, he went home, took a shower, dressed again, and took off and went to play with the New York Philharmonic.
Wow.
That
he had
morning.
That kind of talent.
So,
yes, he did.
Yeah, it was something.
And he was in demand as a studio musician because he could sight read anything you put in front of him.
Not easy for guitar players to read. In fact, the joke is, how do you get a guitar player to turn down? You put music in front of him, and all of a sudden, okay, I'm going to back off on the volume here.
So you currently have 4 or 5 CDs. Maybe I've miscounted, but I think that's about the right number.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah. And one of your CDs, It's a Lark, which you did solo guitar. And one of the songs that you play on that album is your take on Moonlight in Vermont.
Yes.
And that's one of Johnny Smith's famous tunes. And I can hear echoes of Johnny Smith in the way you play it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And so I thought we would hear a little bit of Moonlight in Vermont.
Sure.
If you could perform with any musician who is no longer with us, who would that be?
That would be Art Tatum.
Interesting.
I love the way Art Tatum played piano. He was widely recognized, even to this day, the greatest jazz piano player of all time. Maybe Oscar Peterson would give him a run for his money,
uh-huh.
But I just love the way he played. He's very fluid, especially when he did solo piano.
Yeah.
That's kind of the same approach that I took on It's a Lark. It's a little bit different than Joe Pass's solo guitar approach. But I just love the way Art Tatum played. Extremely fluid.
I've called you the Art Tatum of the jazz guitar.
No, thank you.
and I mean that in a very complimentary way.
Thank you very, very much.
Wayne, I really appreciate you being here. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
And we'll certainly be hearing you on KRCC.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again.
That was Dick Fairley speaking with jazz guitarist Wayne Wilkinson. To hear that conversation again, you can head to krcc.org and also catch Dick Fairley every Thursday night from 8 to 11 on the KRCC Jazz Excursion Show. You're listening to Air Check from KRCC. Stick with us. ¶¶
From KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicki Greger, host of the Morning Music Mix.
I'm Jake Brownell, producer at KRCC.
And I'm Jeff Berry, host of the Blue Plate Special.
So for our final segment, we're doing something we haven't done before. We're taking our musical roundtable idea, where we go around the table and share a song, and we're remixing it a little bit. And this time, instead of sharing our favorite new releases, we've each agreed to offer up a guilty pleasure.
This was a very tough assignment, and yet very. I found it to be very sort of eye-opening to who I am when I started looking at this a little deeper.
Well, there was a truth I had to face because I thought of a lot of songs right off the bat, and I had to narrow it down, but I had to get real. I had to get real with myself and say, come on, where is that clappy hand pleasure? You're admitting now to people who may also embrace this song. I think a lot of people do, but why? Why is it squirreled away? Why don't I play it on air?
You have to get real with yourself. I think you should go first.
Yeah, Vicki, let's start with you.
So in reviewing this, because I had a lot in my head, but I'm like, okay, what is it that makes the hair on my arm stand up? What is it that makes me want to light my lighter? What is it that I sing in my car or in my home as loud as I can? I don't care what my face looks like when I do it.
So for you, it incites the funky dance, and you feel guilty about doing the funky dance.
I let go. That's what this song is all about. I just let it go.
Interesting.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Although I tend to do it in private. Now, I'm circling the 70s here, so there's a lot of set adrift and memory bliss around this too, but from the opening notes to this song, the European-style ambulance sound, the gentle harpsichord, the introspective lyrics of acceptance and hope, I'm a sucker. There's a hook in my mouth, and I'm singing because it also rocks. My pick is Aerosmith, Dream On.
Wow.
Yeah.
Aerosmith.
Every time that I look in the mirror, all these lines in my face getting clearer. The past is gone, it went back like dust to dawn.
So there you go. You're getting funky. You're getting a little funky.
Check out the hair on my arms.
Standing up on end.
It's almost impossible not to belt along with this song.
I know. And then the really high up hard part toward the end, I sing that as loud as I can.
I join you in guilt on this. Is it because Steven Tyler became such a kind of oddball in his older age? He's kind of a character of himself, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he just, you know, continues to live is maybe the thing. Right. Maybe we thought a different end to him. But this song, here we go. You know, at this point now I'm swaying, the lighters are going, and we haven't even hit the chorus yet. And the hair is still up on my arm. So I got to be real. Aerosmith, Dream On, life-changing song for me.
It's a rock anthem for sure. It is an American rock anthem.
Sing with it. Sing for the year, sing for the laugh, sing for the tear. Sing with me, just for today, maybe tomorrow, the good Lord will take you away.
All right, well, let's move on. Jeff?
Let me try and preface my guilt. So I'm kind of a big guy, got an imposing stature. I'm the epitome of masculinity, wouldn't you say?
You do say so yourself, yeah.
I try hard. I try really hard. but, you know, there's a feminine side to me that I kind of came about because I had a mother who was a feminist, because I grew up in the 70s, because my formative years were the 70s and 80s, where I kind of gained my adulthood. And there was a book out in the 80s that was called Real Men Don't Eat Quiche. Remember that?
I do. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the music that I'm going to tell you about right now is written by a guy who not only eats quiche, but he bakes it, and he probably wins awards for his recipe, right? He is a sweet guy. And, you know, you're not allowed to say sweet if you're a masculine, male, American, red-blooded dude.
Especially if you're burly.
You can't say sweet. You can't say sweet. But I just came across this song a couple of nights ago, and I was watching James Corden's Carpool Karaoke, and I got sucked into a Carpool Karaoke with Chris Martin of Coldplay, and those two guys were belting out Yellow, and I just loved it. I love Coldplay, and I've been told that it's girl rock, you know, so that goes against my my masculinity, right? So I've got this fragile ego, and that's where my guilt / shame comes from.
So it's about gender norms for
you. Yeah, it is. It is.
I think we have to listen to the song now.
Yeah.
Yellow by Coldplay. There's no arguing.
You said
with
sweet?
That. It is.
You're a new millennial. You can do that with ease.
It's no, you know, Coldplay was kind of big when I was, you know, in middle school and high school, you know, very tender age, where highly emotional music.
Tender age, tender
right.
moments.
Your first, yeah. you
tender
know,
memories.
Your love.
Right. Definitely Coldplay takes me back there.
And it was all yellow. Drew Barrymore got married to this song.
She did.
Well, I just read that somewhere. It could be a lie, but I think it's true.
All right, Jake, your turn.
Well, you guys have had such good ones. I don't know if I can really live up to it, but the song that I'm going to pick is one that I'm not quite as attached to yet because it's a new song. It just came out, but it's one that I've listened to fair amount since it came out, and I'll explain why I feel guilty about it. But first, I should just say the song is off of the new album by one Britney Spears.
Whoa. Yeah.
There it
Shame.
Is.
Shame.
Right there.
Enough said.
And, you know, part of why this was a hard exercise for me was I think there was a time when I had a very sharp delineation in my mind between the kind of music I liked to listen to and pop music, you know, music that was cool and music that wasn't. And I think not, and this is not just me, but I think as a culture, you know, pop music and indie music and these lines have been blurring for a while now. And so it's harder to sort of differentiate between the two. And I think for me, there was a time recently when I just started to realize like, huh, most of the artists that I listen to all the time are like top 40 artists. but I'm not ashamed of that. I don't really care because I think the music is good. So this album just came out this month, and clearly she or her producers or whoever knows what's hot right now, knows kind of what's going on in the world of, you know, electronic music, indie music, etc.
They're working it in. What's the tune?
It's
what's
pretty
the
good
tune?
All right, the song is called Invitation, and it's off her new album Glory.
You evoke a feeling.
See?
I'm ready to reveal that. Let inhibitions come undone.
They don't play fair.
Right? It's like perfectly manufactured by people that are smarter than I am, who know exactly what the moment calls for, and here it comes.
Wow.
And, you know, this, when I hear this, it's like the bands, indie bands that kind of precursed it, like Purity Ring would be one of them, or others, you know. It's not original necessarily, but it's pretty good.
It's
and
good.
You've heard the same thing with Justin Bieber and other kind of big pop stars who are trying to pull from the underground. Anyways.
So, Jake, if we drive by your house and we see shadows on the window dancing, I'm going to know that this is what the soundtrack to your particular living room moment is.
It very well might be.
Yes and hope and no maybes. Not gonna beg, so don't make me.
So that's it for our guilty pleasures. And now we'd like to ask you, the listener, to tell us yours. Give us a call at 719-428-KRCC. That's 719-428-5722. And leave us a message about your guilty pleasure song.
Everybody's got one.
You can tell us.
Yes.
Tell us the song and why you feel guilty about it, and your message could be featured in the next episode of Air Check. Again, the number to call, 719-428-KRCC.
Air Check is a production of KRCC in Colorado Springs. You can find more about any of the songs or artists you heard in this episode at krcc.org. You can also now subscribe to the Air Check podcast by searching Air Check, two words, in the iTunes store. For KRCC and Air Check, I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Jeff Beery.